You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So you've recently published another book, Vanishing Points, which is a very expansive and sort of intimate exploration of memory and moments. How did you find writing this, first of all?
I really like writing my books, Dol. It's a kind of, it's an obvious thing to say. But once the shape of a book starts coming into view, you start with some pieces and you wonder where it's going, and there's all kinds of agony and, is this any good? Have I lost it? Can I keep going? And then when you've got a few pieces together, it's that old thing. Those pieces start to talk to each other, and then with luck, you suddenly see that something is shaping. So for me, a poetry book is like that. This particular book, it's got 8 quite large pieces in it. It's not a whole lot of little poems, or at least those little poems are kind of made up into 8 longer things. So in some ways, it was more the way in which maybe a short story writer might work, or even a novelist, when you start to shape something, and then once that shape is there, then you know what you've got and you can work with it. And it's always a bit kind of nerve-wracking before that moment, but after that moment, I'd have to say it's wonderful working on a book like that. Once you've seen the shape and you think, that's what I thought I was doing.
So this
and that's
sort of
what happened with this one.
Yeah. So the sort of cohesiveness and sort of the way that all the pieces sort of flow into each other took a lot of work to sort of establish.
Well, yes and no. That process of finding out what it was I was doing, once I realized it, I thought, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things I like to do when I'm putting a book together is to work chronologically by composition. So, I write one thing and I sit and look at it for a while and then, okay, well, we could go on from there, by putting this thing in place. And that whole book is worked like that. The first piece in there, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, goes back to about 2013. And the very last thing in there was written maybe April of last year, something like that. So in a funny kind of way, it's a map of what I'm doing or what I'm thinking about, and what's important and what's connecting. And I like your description of it being a lot about time and memory and the way those things fold over each other, because that's certainly what was on my mind as I was putting Vanishing Points together.
And another thing that struck me about the book is how you sort of create these visual and oral textures of nature.
Oh good. It's working.
It seems very codependent, like nature and sort of humans and the way these animals and sort of places are sort of tied in with human emotions. So what sort of thing does nature mean to you as a poet and as a person?
Well, if I could use the word the world, or the words, the world instead of nature, the way that I walk through the world, because I am a walker, I can't see. I'm a blind person. When I'm walking, with a dog. So I nearly always have another sentient being with me. That dog is really important. Or I'm walking, with a family member or with a friend. And I love walking. And part of walking when you can't see is that you have to be extraordinarily careful about the world around you. I mean, for safety reasons, which is the kind of boring reason. Yeah, we don't want to bang into anything. But it really does tune up all your senses. And I would say that as a poet, I've always operated like that. But since the years of not being able to see, and that goes back to about 2012, when I really, really, really couldn't see the world around me. So there's that keenness to be able to sense the world and also to bring the world back. Okay, so every time I bring something into a poem, and when I name something or a texture comes into a poem or a smell or anything like that, something that's quite concrete in the sensory world, it brings it back, it brings it into writing, and it therefore, when somebody's reading it or I'm reading it back to myself, it brings that thing back to me, okay, or to a reader. So it's a way of registering the world around, but also every time I read that composition, I get that hit again. And that's a really I was going to say a real comfort, yeah. if you like. It's a way of always being in the world. And I think that's for me, I think that's one of the really important things that poetry can do.
Mm.
So I love walking around, being able to look using my other ways of sensing, if I can put it like that. There are, I've lost physical vision, but I'm fond of saying I'm a very visual person. It's just that my eyes don't work. I think that's not a bad way of summing it up, because the human brain, it's, we are wired for visual input, and my brain's no different. It's just that it hasn't got much to do. So I've found other ways of using those bits of my cerebral cortex, if I can put it like that.
Yeah, so it's like you're sort of taking these sort of idyllic moments and these sort of very warm, beautiful, no?
Warm and beautiful is really important, but also the other rougher stuff.
Yeah.
There are some poems in there about literally banging into things, which I do from time. You can tell a blind person by the bruises on our shins. we don't always manage to navigate successfully. And part of what that book is doing over that sort of four years or so that it took to put it together, the other thing it's doing, and that's partly why it's called Vanishing Points, it is also registering the diminishing of the last bit of physical sight that I've got. I've got, as we're talking today, I've got pinpricks of light, that tell me that the window is over there, but there's not much else. And even those pinpricks are really important for orientation. If I stand up, I know the window's over there because I can actually see a tiny bit of light. That's important. So I thought it might be quite interesting in the course of the book. It's not the subject of the book because, blindness is I don't want to be always talking about not being able to see. But the book is also a way of registering that diminishing of sight down toward the blackness. But that didn't work as a strategy. We got to April last year and the book was finished. I knew that. And I thought, I've still got these little bits of light. So that didn't work as a strategy. Well, it does. It's just registering another stretch of my engagement with that particular problem. But it is one of the major reasons why I called it Vanishing Points. So don't know what the next book will do. We'll have to think of something else.
So you talked about liking to walk around and sort of take in what's going on. Do you write in nature and write outdoors as well, or do you write indoors?
I would like to say that I do, but I now would also, how when you drive a car, you shouldn't dream when you're driving a car because you're going to have an accident if you do that.
Mm.
Well, it's a little bit the same when you are driving a dog. In the old days, before the dog, and there was a white stick before the dog, when I struck a writing problem, I'd take it for a walk, and I advise all my students to do that, just get out, get away from that screen, get away from that notebook, take the problem for a walk, just go somewhere, and you'll find that walking will actually, or swimming, or some kind of, physical activity, it will fix the problem. You won't even know you're thinking about it, but you'll come back and you'll go, I know what to do. And I had to actually stop myself doing that while I was driving in the long ago when I did drive a car because that was dangerous. And of recent years, I've also had to say, actually, I need to concentrate on just making sure the dog and I are heading where I think we're heading and she hasn't taken me down, a street that I wasn't aware of. And that was quite a sad moment because I thought, I've lost that kind of strategy of walking and thinking and knowing that by the end of the walk, something will have been solved, something. And so I was a bit down in the mouth about that for a while. And then, and I think this is, it's one of those miraculous things that happens. Then I realized, actually, even though, yes, I was concentrating on where we were and navigating this particular walk, which is usually just around the neighborhood. It's the same walk we do all the time, but you do have to concentrate. And then I realized that actually when I did get back to the desk, something, you know, I had actually managed to solve something without thinking about it. So it's that old business, you know, there's things that are happening at the top of your mind and the top of your brain, but there's an awful lot that's going on in those lower levels. And I just needed to trust that in fact, you know, that action, that brain action, that kind of subconscious action, it's all still churning over. And, you know, fortunately, it still manages to bob to the surface. And, you know, great, I've got it, I can do it.
One thing that sort of I really appreciated about your portraits of characters and places with words is that it was so it was just so intimate and so nice to sort of like look at characters in such a sort of almost like a removed but also very touching way. Did the process of imagining these images, did it change over as the blindness progressed? Did you sort of like have a different image of memory and sort of perception of what's happening?
Well, here's the interesting thing. Anything that I saw before, I couldn't see, if I put it like that. So, you know, anything before 2012 or 2008, when it really began to get, you know, quite bad, everything is still there. It's in my visual memory, and that's quite a long memory now. That goes back a long way. And so, you know, I can call, you know, you can do the same thing. You can call an image back, you know, call a face back. And I can do that, but I can only do it as far as, say, 2008 or 2012. So all my friends are still young and beautiful because I can't see what's happened, which is quite funny. You know, they think this is hilarious. You know, they can tell me anything they like about what they look like, and I just have to believe it. Right? but the serious part of that, I guess, is to say that, you know, this book is a lot about memory, because I did want to do that thing of going back to past memory and pulling it by means of putting words to it, making word pictures. I wanted to pull it into the present so that I wouldn't lose it, okay? So there wouldn't come a time when I think, oh, what did that person really look like? Or what was that place really like? So one of the things I chose to do, one of the pieces quite early in the book, and I'd meant to do this for ages, but I'd never got round to it, and I thought, all right, this is the moment, was to go back to the time when I was about 4 through to about 6, when we lived in a little village up the coast from New Plymouth called Uranui. And that's a place that I'm extremely fond of, because it's the first place that I and my brother, who's 14 months younger than I am, it's the first place that we can remember. And basically our parents moved from Stratford, which is very cold and halfway up Mount Taranaki. They moved to the beach, and they, you know, we lived at the beach for 3 or 4 years, and that's the first place that we can remember. And it's become extremely important for both of us. You know, we quite often talk about living, you know, that time when we were living at the beach, and it's where a lot of the groundwork for things that happened later kind of got put down. So I wanted to write about that, and that's why I constructed the two paintings in that piece, which are called, one's called Self Portrait, Still Life, and the other one's called Still Life, Self Portrait. And the two paintings, they are painted, I say in the poem, by my mother, and it's very detailed. It's a very detailed account of how she painted these two rather beautiful scenes, which, you know, it's the scene from looking out from that place where we used to live on the hill at Uranui, out across to the sea, across the river to the sea. And I've got such clear, you know, clear colour memories of that. And, you know, so it was a great challenge to reproduce that memory as two paintings. And if I tell you that what I did was to imagine that my mother was a painter, because in reality she wasn't, she didn't, right? I hope you won't be shocked, okay? Because I always thought of her as the creative, you know, the creative genius in the household. It was my father who was the real painter, the one who actually painted and, you know, did a lot of. He was an artist later in his life, but I wanted to acknowledge, you know, the wonderful creative groundwork that was put in place in those years, And it was my mother and my father both, by taking us to live by the sea, who did that. So it's a kind of homage, that. So, you know, don't be cross. The paintings don't really exist, but they exist now in your mind, and they certainly exist in my mind. And I think that's what, you know, poets, we're allowed to do that. You know, don't trust us. Never trust us completely, right? But do trust the words. You know, trust any poet, trust the words. And, you know, what that poem is bringing to you as, you know, a reader or a listener, that's what you can trust about any poet. You know, hand on heart, that's all real. That's very real.
And the sort of images of these paintings are sort of as real as an image of any painting that I would have seen, I feel
Thank
like.
Thank you. They're as real as real, okay? Mm. I got the idea from Martin Edmond, who wrote a book called Dark Night Walking with McCann. And Martin starts that book by remembering a Colin and Anne McCann painting that used to hang on the wall of their bedroom at home when they were kids, because Anne McCann was a painter as well as Colin. And the two of them would, from time to time, produce paintings for children. And Martin, as a kid, used to stare at this painting, which was a landscape with all sorts of wonderful trains and cars, people doing things in it. He looked at that as a kid, and, you know, he could walk you around that painting. And then when he started writing this book about McCann's painting, he produced a word picture of that painting that he remembered. And I thought, that is so interesting. It's the most beautiful piece of writing. You feel that you too have seen that Anne and Colin McCann painting that Martin used to stare at as he dropped asleep, you know, at night. And I thought, that is what words can do. They are, you know, these are word pictures. And that's such an important thing. And that's why I thought I'd have a go at it. And when I'd written my piece, I sent it off to Martin and said, what do you think about this? And he wrote back and he said, where are the paintings? And I thought, oh, good, good, good. I said, Martin, they're not. He said, sorry, mate, they're not. And he said, ah, okay, I see what you're doing. So at that point, I thought, well, you know, I've succeeded in what I wanted to do, which is to make something, you know, that's not there. You know, history's not there anymore. We recall history by writing about it. Those pictures were not real pictures, but they were very real. They were in my mind. I brought them back. And now, if they give pleasure to someone like you who's accessing, you know, that poem and that book for the first time, then I think, you know, I feel just fine about that.
Just finally, because we're running out of time, did you receive much support with writing and with being able to sort of access means of creating words as your blindness progressed?
Oh, yeah. Look, it's very good to be living in the 21st century. There's just so much. There's so much technological support. So, you know, all my inputs now are audio, okay? And that means that my computer is set up so that, you know, I type and it talks to me. I've got a screen reader. So it means that, you know, I work here at the university. You know, I'm a lecturer. It means that I'm slower than people who can see a screen because I have to listen to it in real time. But I've learned over, you know, it's quite a difficult thing to learn, but, you know, practice and do it every day. And you can learn to listen to that mechanical voice, the GPS voice. And, in, you know, it takes a while, but in the end you learn to think along with it. And therefore, I can compose and I can edit. So that's the important technological support. And, you know, I couldn't keep going without it. But there's also the support of friends and family. There's always people around. You know, if I need something read, if I'm in a classroom, you know, I'm the only person in a classroom who can't see. There's a lot of perfectly competent eyes and minds in the classrooms. And, you know, in my teaching, I'm always asking people to read a poem. You know, if we need a poem in the room. You know, when this began to happen, I thought, oh, this is terrible. I won't be able to read poems when I'm teaching. And then I went, duh. Actually, it's a really good if the students in the room can read those poems out loud. That's actually going to be good for everybody. They're helping the classroom situation. It's good experience to have to read something aloud, and it gets around the problem of, here's a teacher who can't do something. Teacher can ask somebody else to do it. So, you know, I love listening. So I've got audio books on my iPod. I've got people who can read to me if I need something read. So it's just a matter, you just have to restitch the world, if you like. You know, it was one way, and then you just adapt. I mean, that is the perfectly miraculous thing about human beings. Whatever we get tossed, we are able to adapt with a bit of help. You know, that help is really important. But being able to restitch or adapt a world so that you can get round in it again and be functional and useful, to me, that's critical. That's really important. And that's why, for me, poetry, it's always been interesting as investigation. And I think it will, with luck, it will go on being interesting. I feel that I can go on, and that's the best feeling to have when you've just published a book.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.